All right, welcome back, everybody. 11/22, November 3rd, Wednesday. We were doing NMR this morning. We're going to continue doing NMR in this lecture. And I don't know how many NMRs we can get through in an hour and a half. We might be able to do two more. We'll see how this goes. But just a couple of things to note. Let me go ahead and switch over to the lecture component. Oh, and screen share this. That'll help so you guys can see what we're doing. Okay. So we're moving on to NMR practice. And the two things that I did this morning that are important are looking at protic versus aprotic in proton NMR. So these are things that usually show up that are alcohols and carboxylic acids. And these two things usually present in very specific ways in the proton NMR. There are other functional groups that do this too, amines do this too, but with the alcohols particularly, they tend to show up. And rather than being a sharp spike, they tend to be these little bumps. And so this would be in a range that would be somewhere between 5.0 all the way down to about 2.0 would be the range that I would see those in parts per million. And for carboxylic acids, likewise, they tend to be a little bump rather than a sharp peak, and they show up somewhere between 12 and 10 parts per million is where they typically show up. And the other thing that we talked about is an experiment that's called exchanges. This is an experiment that is done with deuterium oxide, D2O. And the idea is that when we have an alcohol and we place D2O into it, that it can hydrogen bond with the deuterium oxide. And as it hydrogen bonds with the deuterium oxide, sometimes what happens is that the electrons will flip and flip to give you ROD. And then we end up with an equivalent of acid and base. It's like auto dissociation. But what happens is the proton exchanged. And when we put deuterium oxide in that, because of the exchanging protons, what gave a signal before in the beginning of the experiment as this broad bump now goes to just a flat baseline. And the protic proton that was showing up now disappears. And what we say is that we show it on the spectrum. Let's say that we have a proton NMR spectrum. We have some different peaks that may be showing up in different places. And then we have this broad singlet. And then maybe we have some other peaks that are down here. And they'll write a little exchanges over it. And that exchanges, when they write that over a peak, tells you that that peak is an alcohol peak or a carboxylic peak or an amine peak, that it's one of the protic hydrogen type peaks. And so the only way that they can communicate that they did that experiment to you is to write exchanges on it. And so we will see that there will be some NMRs where they write exchanges. And that means that the experiment was done. They ran the first spectrum, they put D2O in, they suspected that they had a protic hydrogen. And then after running the spectrum a second time, the peak did indeed disappear. And because the peak disappeared, that meant that that peak was a protic peak that disappeared in some ways. And so based on its location, we can then either tell that it was a carboxylic acid, or it was an alcohol, or it was an amine. But oftentimes by its shape alone, the broadness of that shape, and the broadness is brought about by the hydrogen bonding, the broadness alone oftentimes tells us that it is that type of peak. But then we do the exchanges experiment to be sure that it is that type of peak. Okay. And the other thing that we did, so that was number one. So that's the exchanging experiment. The other big piece of information is aromatics. Aromatic patterns. In aromatic patterns, the aromatic protons typically have very similar J values. And because of that, we can get very specific types of aromatic patterns. So this one is monosubstituted. So in looking at a monosubstituted aromatic ring, what we typically see is not singlet, doublet, triplet, 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 doublet. We end up with five signals, and those five signals can be in a number of different patterns, but typically what we will get is if the R group is sort of electron withdrawing, we'll get the two doublets downfield and then a series of triplets. And the triplets may overlap onto each other and make it hard and make it a multiplet, hard to distinguish. But these guys will all show in the 8 parts per million on down to maybe the 7 parts per million in the aromatic range. And so if we get five signals, in that range, 8 to 7, then that usually indicates a monosubstituted aromatic ring system. When we look at the disubstituted aromatic ring systems, there's a couple of different patterns that we were just discussing. And I'm going to do these with two different groups rather than the same group because it makes a difference. So let's say that we have X and Y. If they're both X's or both Y's, then we get a slightly different pattern. Now, what I typically do with these is I make allowances for the protons where they may have the same J value, or the protons may have different J values. If they all have the same J value, this is a doublet, a triplet, and a doublet. But if they have different J values, let's say that this proton and this proton have different J values with the proton in the middle, then instead of a triplet, this could show up as a double doublet. And the same thing can happen here. So they could be double doublets or they could be triplets, depending upon how the molecule shakes out and whether or not the J values are the same or not. So this typically presents with the triplets and the doublets. They can be in different orders. So I don't want to say that the order is always exactly what we expect there, but they oftentimes present present that way. When we get two groups, that are meta to one another, now what usually winds up happening is we get doublet, double doublet, or triplet. So I kind of leave the option open, doublet, and most importantly, the singlet. This one is usually identifiable by its tall singlet from the other sorts of patterns that wind up showing up. And so it's that singlet that we look for that denotes the difference in that pattern. And then the last pattern that we see in this grouping is the one where we get X and Y on opposite sides. And this one is unique by symmetry. And so it has a symmetry that cuts down the molecule. And because of that symmetry, this molecule is what is called non-first order. And it presents in a way that we would not be able to predict otherwise. It presents with a pattern that is very unique, that looks like a very symmetrical inverted quartet. And so between these patterns, having 5 signals, 4 signals, 4 with singlet, and then the 2 with inverted, we can usually pick out the substitution pattern on an aromatic ring system fairly quickly. And so aromatic ring systems are usually pretty nice to work with because they're so easily distinguishable from one another. Particularly, this thing really helps us out in figuring out between these different patterns. And this one is so unique. This non-first order system is what we call an A prime, B, B prime. So we call it an A prime, B, B prime system. And there are some other systems that will follow that A prime, B, B prime, and they give very similar spectrums when we see that. And they usually come about being on aromatic ring systems with high symmetry. And it's the high symmetry that has some sort of reflection within the molecule that is a quantum mechanical reflection aspect that gives rise to that inverted quartet type signal. So between these, this really helps with looking at it. We can generally tell just by a glance at the spectrum, we can generally tell what type of aromatic ring system it is. And we do a lot of aromatic ring systems, which is why I wanted to highlight those and make those really clear for everybody. Okay, so those are the two unique things that we're adding. We're adding in this idea of exchanges and a protic hydrogen, different from aprotic, and aromatic patterns that can be really helpful in discerning out what the different molecules are. All right, so I'm torn between wanting to show you higher quality spectrum versus working with the website that we've been working with. And I think the website that we've been working with has been really productive so far, despite the fact that the spectrum is not always of the best quality that I like to see. But they have so much diversity and it's such a good website to work from that I think that we should We should keep working on that. So let me go ahead, if you guys are ready. I know I was doing a lot of writing there. You're trying to keep up with notes. Let me go ahead and let's go get another spectrum and let's start tearing into it. Let's see what 3 has to show for us. This has C4H7O2Br, 4C6H4Bri. Well, actually, that's a good one to look at real quick. C6H4Bri. I was going to zoom in. Can you tell me how many units of unsaturation this molecule has?
Four. We're just counting the spikes, the peaks.
To do the units of unsaturation, we're doing 2 times 6.
Oh. We're doing the formula.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to do it.
Do the formula really quick. Tell me how many units of unsaturation it has.
I'd say 4.
Yeah, it's got 4 units of unsaturation. So with 6 carbons, 4 units of unsaturation, this is likely to be what type of molecule?
Some ring, probably.
It's a ring?
6-membered ring, probably.
Yeah, 6-membered ring with 3 alternating double bonds. It's an aromatic ring. So this is likely to be an aromatic ring. We could also tell that by these 4 signals, which are in the 8 to 7 range. So this is the aromatic range. So we can look at the NMR and we can just look at it and say, this is an aromatic molecule. All right, let me zoom in on these peaks. So this is 8 and 6.9. Okay, the first 2 on the left-hand side are doublets, and the last 2 on the right-hand side are what?
Triplets.
They're triplets. So 4 chemical environments, 2 doublets, 2 triplets.
So we're gonna have a mono substituted.
Well, with 4 protons and 1, 2, 3, 4. And a bromine and an iodine.
Okay, we would have a ortho. We would have meta.
This is ortho.
What is ortho?
And this is para. So you've got 2 doublets and 2 triplets. Let me go back to the signal. So take a look at this screen real quick. And we're going back to the spectrum, 2 doublets, 2 triplets. Back to this screen. See how it's matching this pattern right here?
Yep.
So that would mean that the 2 halogens would need to be right next to each other. Okay. See how we can look at this without doing all the work that we were doing before, and we can come up with the right pattern. Why it's pretty nice to be able to look at the aromatic ring systems and to figure out the aromatic ring system. We didn't even need to look at the carbon to be able to sort that out. Compound 3 was not aromatic. I was going to see if I could find another aromatic. I don't have any other simple ones that are back like that. Let's do compound five. All right, so since we're going to start a new one formally, this is going to be compound five. On web spectra. And it has a formula which is C7H8O2. Let's go ahead and do units of unsaturation. 2 times 7 plus 2, no nitrogens. No halogens. So that's going to equal 14, 16. We subtract 8 from the 16. That gives us 8. We divide that by 2. That gives us 4 units of unsaturation. Anytime you have a small molecule, and 4 or more units of unsaturation, let's say greater than or equal to 4 units of unsat, you should be thinking aromatic ring system. Okay, the next thing that I tend to do is I tend to work by impressions. So what I'll do is I'll go to the proton spectrum and I will screenshot this, bring it in, and then we'll do some detail work afterwards. But I'm going to work by impressions first.
So if we're less than 7 parts per million on that, do we not then have an aromatic pattern?
No, not necessarily. That we can go and we can grab that other table that shows the aromatics, and the aromatics can dip down to about 7.5, okay. Maybe even a little bit lower. It just depends on what other groups are on the aromatic ring system. Mm-hmm. So I would say that aromatics generally extend from up to 8, but down to around here would be sort of my aromatic range that I can be in there. So first impressions, when I look at this, without doing anything else, I sort of like to read my first impressions. What I pick out of this is this guy here is really far downfield. Being that far downfield and looking like it integrates for 3, if I think that these are each 1, and this looks like it's also 3, this is looking like a methoxy group to me, just because it's so far downfield. So I just sort of pick out a group that's there. This thing, I don't know what that is. This has got multiple sorts of groups that are on it. And this, I don't know what this is, but these are looking like aromatic. Or maybe, I don't know. So maybe that's all I can get out of first impressions. And then it's a matter of going through and looking at the detail and then starting to diagram it out. So I just sort of get an idea of what's there, an idea of what sort of molecule I'm looking at. And so I'm expecting an aromatic ring system. I've got 7 carbons. That means 6 are in the aromatic. 1 is not. 1 of them is a methoxy. And the other thing that's important, that's not here, this is almost as important. no regular alkyl. Also, the other thing that's important, no aldehyde and no carboxylic acid. That what is not there is almost as helpful as what is there. By looking at it and realizing that certain things are not in the spectrum. And the other part here, no exchanges. Which means that there is no alkyls to consider. So that really limits down my possibilities when I take those things into account. There's no regular alkyl types of groups. There's no exchanges. There's no aldehydes or carboxylic acids. Now I got to figure out what else is going on in this molecule. So now what I'm going to do is, after I've sort of done my first impressions, now I'll take that structure, and I'm going to go and bring in the details along with it. So I'm going to go take a few more screenshots and balloon out these. That old stuff is going to come with it.
So the methoxy group, is that going to be, is there going to be some kind of other functional group that's meted towards that
or meted to that? We're going to have to see. So let's go get some other pieces of information now. Let's see if I can get enough of a detail zooming in between 7.3 and 5.5? Let's see if that gets it for us. That's going to be hard to read, but I think we can see it. I'll try to blow it up a little bit. It's not so bad once it's blown up like that. Okay, so there's our detail. All right, so integration-wise, I'm going to take the smallest peak that I see over here. There's two of them that are about the same height. And I'm going to create a scale. I'm going to copy that. That's not what I intended to do. Nor was that. Okay, so now I've got my scale. That does look like it's pretty close to 3. It's a little taller than 3, but it's pretty close to 3. That would be 1. That looks like it's 3. And that looks like it's 1. So it does look like this is 3 to 1 to 3 to 1. And what I'm seeing here is that this is 1, and this is 1, and this is 3. To make my table, I would start off with parts per million, integration, multiplicity, number of neighbors, and then assignment. And this is where the poor quality of the spectrum comes in. It sometimes makes it a little bit difficult. All right, so 3.8 Looks like almost 8 is my first peak. Integration is 3. Multiplicity, we didn't zoom in on that, but just from looking at it, you can tell what that first peak is. We could always go back and zoom in on it and be sure. It's actually not hard to do. Zoom out, click on the peak.
Would you say this is flat or is this spiky?
This is very spiky, and it's only one peak.
It's a singlet.
It's a singlet. So this first peak is a singlet, and that means how many neighbors does it have?
2.
Ah, for a singlet, n plus 1 rule. So what we do is we take the peak and we minus 1 from the peak.
Oh, just 1 then?
1 minus 1 is 0, no neighbors. And we had already, under our first impression, sort of given this assignment. It's so far downfield that because it's integrating for 3, this value, that means that it's a CH3 group and it's tagged to some strong electron withdrawing group. Sometimes I'll actually write strong because that's all the way down at 4 instead of somewhere close to 2 or 3.
And that's why you're saying you think it's a methoxy group?
Exactly, because methoxy groups usually show up at around 4. A CH3
with oxygen
oftentimes is around 4.0 parts per million.
Gotcha.
Because it's a really strong electron withdrawing group that pulls that down. All right, next up, it looks like we've got 5.6. And this is integrating for 1. When we look at it there, that 5.6 is that guy that's right there. It's a poor quality of spectrum. It's, but it is a singlet. So it's got 0 neighbors. And for type, I might defer here to going and looking at the table and seeing what the table says. I don't know what. I don't know what this guy is. So let's copy that table. Should be enough room to fit the table in here. So we're looking at a peak now that is sitting here at about 5.6. 5.6, about halfway, maybe a little more than halfway. This is below where I see aromatics most of the time. This is usually a carbon-carbon double bond with a hydrogen on a carbon-carbon double bond. At least that's what this is telling me. So I might take that and say, well, maybe that is a proton that is on a carbon-carbon double bond. But when I have concerns, it's okay to put question marks on things, like I may not be entirely certain about what that is. So I may leave that as an open question. The table's telling me that's what it is, but I might have some concerns about that. Okay, now we got to deal with this crappy thing. And I say crappy thing because look at this thing. What is that? Number one, it's really poor quality spectrum, but we can tell something about it. And that is that this is not any pattern that I have seen that's recognizable. It's not a double doublet. It's not a quartet. It's not a triplet. And it's not likely to be 3 protons in the same chemical environment. So here's what happens sometimes. Sometimes when a signal is not a good strong signal and you cannot easily integrate them separately, they will take and they will integrate them all together. And they may be different protons that are integrated all together. So these are three protons that are being integrated together. And what I'm seeing in this is that this thing looks like a singlet. This thing looks like a doublet. And this thing, I don't know what it is, but it's looking like there's a bunch of protons that are in here. And based on their range at about 6.5, what I will do is I will say that this is right around 6.5, and that this is integrating for 3, and that these are looking aromatic. And the number of neighbors, I don't know.
So Jason, every time we have an inverted signal, is it always going to be two symmetrical inverted signals, or can you just have one?
No, it'll always be two inverted like that. It'll always be double inverted quartet.
Okay, because you'll always have like one substituent completely opposite the other substituent.
Yeah, and they balance each other and they give the symmetry, and so we always get the double, the two inverted quartets that are mirrored okay. each other. Okay. And that's not what this is looking like. All right, and then I've got something out at 7.15. And that one is integrating for one proton. So I'm looking at this proton out here. That's integrating for one. That's nice and clean. And that one is a clearly defined pattern. What is that one? What type of pattern is that?
Which point? Which one are you pointing at?
You guys see the pointer going around?
Okay. Circles?
Is that a triplet?
It is a triplet. Yeah. So maybe what I need to do too, I'll give you some patterns in a minute. How many neighbors does a triplet have?
Two.
Good. Take the number of signals, subtract one. So 3 subtract 1, 2. It's the n plus 1 rule. And in terms of what that triplet is, that triplet, if we go back to here, that triplet is sitting in the aromatic range. So that's looking aromatic. So taken together, these guys taken together are 4 aromatics. And that's going to be interesting. So sometimes we have enough information from one of the types of spectra. Sometimes we don't. In this case, I would say it would be good to go ahead and get the carbon NMR. And let's see what we're dealing with in the carbon NMR. So let's go grab the carbon and see what we can do there. So we go back to the problem, grab the carbon, and let's go ahead and bring this in. Now the carbon, we don't need to look for splitting because the carbon doesn't normally demonstrate splitting. It can under certain circumstances, but most of the time it does not. So here's our carbon NMR. C13 NMR. And with these, we just get the number of chemical environments. Carefully watching out for the solvent. And then we're going to get parts per million and assignments.
So the solvent there is very wide, isn't it?
It is. The solvent is always a triplet. So the solvent is always this little triplet peak. And sometimes it can be as high as the signals. So sometimes it's in the baseline and it's tiny, sometimes it's very tall, but it generally demonstrates at 78 parts per million for CDCL3.
And it's unlikely that something else is right there.
It's unlikely that anything else falls right on top of that. So that's the solvent. And then the rest of the signals, we would just count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that's 7 environments. That means no symmetry because all the carbons are unique. So that can be helpful. When you see all of the carbons, that means that they're all unique and there's no symmetry. If we only see a few of the carbons, then that means generally that the molecule has some symmetry in it, and you're not seeing all of the carbons because there's less chemical environments. It's telling you about how many chemical environments there are. All right, so we're at 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 55. This is 100, so 105. It looks like 108. And 109, and 10, 20, 30, 130, and then 40, 50, 157, and finally 160, 161. So those look like all my signals that are there. Those are the 7 chemical environments. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And for assignments, I'll go get the carbon. Where is it? Carbon table, that's what we want. Oh, because it's the whole page. That's what we'll do. I'll just grab this. See if it grabbed it or not. And I'll grab that part. So it'll take me just a second to delete the rest of this. And then I can erase what's in here. And now we've got a carbon table. But what I want is I want this that I can grab later on as I want to. So that'll make it smaller. That's a little easier to work with. Okay. So at 55 in here, this is usually where a carbon is connected to some electron withdrawing group at 55. So this is a carbon with some electron withdrawing group on it. 105, all the way up in here, this is where a carbon-carbon double bond usually shows up. So that's looking like CC double bond. 108. 108, still in here in CC double bond. 109. 130. 130 is now starting to fall into the aromatic range. And so 130 is looking aromatic. 157, 157 is in here, is looking in the aromatic range. And 161 is looking, I don't know what 161 is. That's a good question too. So 161, let me ask this. What was our formula? Our formula was C7H8O2, and we suspected an aromatic. How many aromatic carbons are there? Or if it's an aromatic ring, how many aromatic carbons are in an aromatic ring?
Six.
So with six aromatic carbons and only one other carbon beyond the six, with seven carbons, six of these are likely to be aromatic. So that means that what I'm looking at here with all of these, this is probably aromatic next to an electron withdrawing group. And that means that all of these, all six of these are likely aromatic. And it's only this one that's not, because we're C7. Six aromatic, one aliphatic. And so despite what the table is telling us, and the table is telling us that some of these are down in the carbon-carbon bond range, it actually makes more sense that these are aromatic and that those are my six aromatic carbons. So what this is telling me is that this is an aromatic system that has no symmetry to it. And that I likely have an aromatic ring system, which that actually doesn't make sense either. Something is amiss. So we may have to do some more work here in trying to figure out what's going on. Okay, let's take what we know and start to compile what we know about this molecule. Under the first impressions, we said that there was no aldehyde. There's no carboxylic acid because they're not showing up over here. There's no regular alkyl groups. There's likely a methoxy group. But something else is missing in this. When we look at what we've got C7H8O2. So out of all of these pieces,
We're missing an oxygen.
We've got C7H8O2. We have identified what we think is a CH3O methoxy group. We have identified what we think is an aromatic ring system. We're missing an oxygen yet. And there appears to be no carbonyl. No alcohol. No carboxylic acid. Six. Seven.
Could that oxygen be part of the ring?
It could be if we didn't have an aromatic ring system. If the system wasn't truly, or it could be aromatic in a different way. It could be aromatic with an oxygen in it. But then I'm curious where the rest of the, let me go back and see what I'm missing. No symmetry. This is important.
So we couldn't have an oxygen be meta to the methoxide.
Well, that's a good question. When we look at it and we go back to how many protons are likely to be aromatic, that's back here. We're looking at all of these protons, this would be 3, 4, 5. That would be 5 protons that are likely to be aromatic protons. So 5 protons being aromatic would be only one substituent. But the problem that I have with that, and I'll show you the problem that I have with that,
maybe a silly question, but is there a possibility of a bicyclic ring?
It's possible, I suppose. We're going to have to come up with some other... what we're showing here is that not all the pieces of information are aligning, and they're not all showing the same thing. And or they are showing the same thing, and we're not seeing it just yet. This is HA. This is also HA. This is HB. This is HB. This is HC. In a structure like this, that's one environment, that's two environments, that's three environments, and that's four environments. This has four chemical environments. I should say four proton environments. Let's do it that way. How many carbon environments does it have?
Six.
Seven.
One.
Two. Three.
Two.
Five, six, three, seven. Seven. Yeah.
Four. Five. In carbon environments, would go like this. So we would see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 carbon environments. And that's not fitting our 7 carbon environments that we're seeing here. Because all of the carbons are not unique. There's symmetry in the molecule. So something else is going on. We're missing something here. So let's see if we can find it. Let's go back to the spectrum.
Does it change the carbon environment if it's equatorial or like the ring itself being flipped? Like in a chair conformation, you know, you can have equatorial or...
Not when it's aromatic and it's all flat.
Yeah.
So when it's all flat and aromatic, there's no chair conformations. There's nothing going on like that. So we've got to go back to the spectrum. Let's go back to the actual website. Go back to the problem. Let's look at the IR spectrum. Well, that's interesting and unexpected. I didn't expect that at all. What is the IR showing?
That there's an aldehyde or a... ketone, isn't that big giant bulge on the far left top?
This, I don't have a pointer on this screen, but that broad shape centered on 3500.
Yeah.
That's not an aldehyde or that's not a carbonyl. What type of thing gives that there?
That would be a hydroxyl.
It's a hydroxyl, it's an alcohol.
But it's also not a regular hydroxyl. It looks like there's something imparting on it.
Well, let's go back here to the proton, because why isn't this showing me in exchanges if this has a hydroxyl? That that should say exchanges on it if it's a hydroxyl. And then that allows me to reassess if that's really true. If that's true,
thing there.
That's what messed me up on this. Okay, so here's what's wrong. This peak right here at 5.5. Let me go back to.
It's a proton exchange there?
Yeah, I would not do that to you. That is mean. This one should say exchanges on it.
Who writes that?
The NMR tech. The person running the NMR who's supposed to do the experiment and figure it out.
Don't they get like paid $250 an hour, Rito?
Yeah, they get paid a lot. Except for this guy who's getting fired. And it's a good thing they put that IR in there, or we wouldn't have seen it. Okay, so that allows us to reassess.
So can you not tell because it's kind of flattish looking when you zoom in?
This quality of this NMR is not high enough to be able to see that.
I mean, if you look at the ones on the left, they're much more spiky looking than this one on the right.
Yeah, they're much sharper and this one's broad. So yeah, I could see that sort of in the broad and where it is. But so this changes everything because this thing that I had the question mark on, I shouldn't erase my question mark. What I should do is now we've decided that this is actually an alcohol. And that means that it's not one of the aromatics. And that means that there are four aromatics. And that means that it's disubstituted. Okay, now we're getting someplace. Now what we can do is we can go back and we can reassess this carbon NMR. And what we don't have is we don't have all these aromatics. What we have is four aromatics. Or six aromatics, and one that's got an OH on it. Okay, so back to the pieces, new pieces. We have an OH. We have an OCH3. We have an aromatic ring system, which has an X and a Y. And all of that should amount to C7H8O2. So let's make sure that that does indeed. This would be six carbons. That's seven carbons. This would be one, and three is four. 5, 6, 7, 8, and O2. Okay, so we've got all the pieces. Now what we need to do is we need to decide the substitution pattern. So is it ortho? Is it meta?
Looks like it would be meta.
Or is it para?
Meta.
Okay. Ortho. Meta. Para. Brian, you're going for meta.
Yeah, we have four signals. We've got the methoxy, the singlet, which is the methoxy spike. And we've got two functional groups. It just looks like the four signals with the singlet looks like it's that pattern.
Okay. So what I want to do real quick is I want to go back to this idea. This is a hard one to discern. I'm not saying you're wrong, Brian. I just want to go back to sort of basics for a second. this is going to be a doublet, double doublet, or possibly a triplet, double doublet, or triplet, doublet. So this pattern is going to look something like this. This pattern is going to be doublet, double doublet, or triplet, doublet, and singlet, where that singlet is really important. So this one, the singlet could show up in a number of places.
Oh, so that singlet doesn't necessarily mean that singlet doesn't fall on the OH, the
well, the singlet that you're thinking about is this guy, but that's going to be in a different place. That's going to be at 4.0. This is going to be in the aromatic range. And so we're looking for the singlet in the aromatic range to distinguish that one. And then this one is going to be the non-first order. This one is going to be the inverted quartet, which is going to be symmetrical. And let me, in addition to this, say the number of carbon and hydrogen environments. This is going to be for proton environments 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This would be 6 environments. And for the carbon, it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 environments there. For proton, this is going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And for carbon, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is going to be 7. For proton, this one is going to be 1, 2, 3, 4. And for carbon, this is going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. See how I'm pulling all my pieces of information now and sort of like using environments and patterns to try to decide what the right thing is here. First off, go to your carbon NMR. How many carbon environments did I have? 7, no symmetry, right? So I come back down here. Notice that this one has symmetry and only has 5 carbon patterns. Can't be this one. That one's out. It's out because of that number. So it's one of the other two. And because the other two have the same number of proton and carbon environments, we have to look at the patterns of the aromatics in order to figure it out. So let's go back and look at the aromatics and see if we can see in the aromatic pattern which one of these fits. So what's the aromatic range? What region do I want to look at? Aromatics fall in this range here in the 7, slightly below 7 up to a little bit above 8. So we come back into here. And we're looking at these guys. This is my 3 and my 1. These are my 4 aromatics. This is the one that exchanges. What am I looking for in here? This is a triplet. This is a doublet. This is an I don't know. And what did we put on that guy?
The meta is the only one with the singlet, right?
It's the meta because of the singlet.
So does that hydroxyl and the position next to that singlet, is that singlet affecting that hydroxyl like when we were looking at the spectral data from the IR?
Not really. The spectral data in the IR is actually fairly normal for what's called a phenol. Phenols are a little bit different than alcohols. They're kind of close to carboxylic acids, and they can get a little bit of the hairy beardness that we see, the jaggedness of a carboxylic acid, because of their acidity. And they're just a little bit different than most alcohols. So that's what you're really seeing is phenol versus alcohol. I think that's what you were picking up on, Travis. Okay. And the part in this one, is this peak right here. It's that peak right there that is really standing out in the rest of it. Now, two things made this very challenging, more challenging than I wanted it to be. The two things that made it challenging was the failure of the labeling of the exchanges, because had we seen that exchanges, we would have gone in a totally different track. I promise you, if there is a peak that exchanges in a spectrum, I will label it. So it will always be labeled if it exchanges. There will be no mystery.
So the process always try, whenever you do this, you do the NMR twice, once with and without whatever heavy water or whatever it is.
Yeah, it is heavy water. That's what we call it, deuterium oxide. Yes and no. I would say most of the time, Reto, we don't go back and do the second experiment unless we suspect that there's a hydroxyl. And so if it's a complete unknown molecule, yeah, we might do it just because it's a complete unknown and we want to see how many different peaks disappear when we do it to give us more information. If it's a compound that we're synthesizing and we suspect we know what it is, then we suspect that we know that there's an alcohol and we don't even bother to do it because we can tell by the shape and where it is that we're expecting it to be there anyway. So we don't always just go and prove it. So the answer is, yeah, if it's an unknown, it's probably better to do it. And no, if we know what it is pretty much, then we don't bother.
It doubles the acquisition cost, I suppose.
It does. And it just takes time. And you got to go find the D2O. And then you got to come back and do the experiment. And it's kind of a pain. All right. So I'm not happy with the way that this one went, in that I got duped by not having the exchange in there. And I could tell that something wasn't reading right. But this actually is not, I'm going to stop the record, not the recording, I'm going to stop the thing here because I want to talk directly to you. This is the way it goes when you're starting. Actually, the way that I got duped in this one is very similar to what you're going to run into as you're doing these your first time through and working the first time through problems, because you're going to get contradictory information. You're going to see things that aren't going to make sense. And you're going to have to go back and do a process of going back to the spectra and reanalyzing and throwing out possibilities that don't fit and reevaluating constantly. And the process that I did here, where I got confused, is exactly what you're going to have to do when you get confused. You start to throw out and eliminate things and do hard eliminations. We do hard eliminations by symmetry. We do hard eliminations by the absence of functional groups that we know not to be present. We do hard eliminations by things that don't fit in with our units of unsaturation. And so, yeah, you're juggling 13 balls, but that's why it's important to write them all down and to do those hard eliminations. And once you do those hard eliminations, what remains has to fit in the spectrum someplace. And the solution is in there. It just takes time to eliminate it and get down to it. It's a process of elimination. And a process of going back and reevaluating. And sometimes where you write question marks, you go back and really reevaluate those things that you put question marks on. You may not be able to identify them at the time, but eventually you'll get down to identify them. So here's what I want you guys to do. This website, which is Web Spectra, the place that I got to it is, I'm just going to go there from ChemEd just to show you one more time.
We're kind of gone, like we can't see the screen.
Oh, yeah, well, that helps. So I was just going back to chemed.study. And I'm going to the 12BL. and I'm going to additional resources. Under additional resources, you see web spectra. It's right here. The web spectra link, that's the one that has all the problems. These are the best problems to do for right now. These problems are all in the beginning section here, are all good problems to be able to do. And they have a combined key. So problems 1 through 15, you could look at the combined key, problems 15 through 30. And each problem has its own key to it that you can view the structure for just that problem to see kind of where you're at. These are the best problems to do right now that I would work on. As I said, the spectrum quality is not always the best on these. The spectrum quality is a little better on the other website. I'll show you what these look like. Organic structure elucidation. But as I said, these don't have the answers to them. And so if you were going to do these problems, I would really only attempt the green. And when you do the green problem, it gives you a formula. It gives you the proton NMR. And when you click in a box, it shows you the spectrum. And as crappy as that looks, that's way better than the other website. And you can see the patterns a little bit more clearly on this website. But again, it doesn't have the answers. And so I shy away from having you guys work on this website unless we're working together so that I can tell you what's right and what's wrong. But they do have higher quality spectrum. So how many of these do you need to do? On web spectra, I would say that if you could do half a dozen of these over the weekend, between now and the weekend, you're going to be in pretty good shape. If you could do 12 of these or 10 of these over the weekend, you're going to be in a whole lot better shape. And the first are going to go slow and be chunky. And sometimes it's better working together than it is working by yourself, because when you get stuck, other people have different ideas and things to look for, and you guys can help unstick each other. So working together on these is a really good idea. All right. In addition to this, I think I also have a co-op for nuclear magnetic resonance. And on the organic structure elucidation, I want you to do 33, 49, and 64. And I'll put this up in Canvas so that you guys see it. So 33, 49, and 64. 39, I couldn't have put 39. 39 is difficult. What did I say? 33, 49, 64. 33 is a medium one. And it's actually not too hard. 49, 64 are likewise sort of run-of-the-mill ones that are not too hard to do. So you've got some problems to work on. So start with those web spectrum ones, feel a little bit more confident on the web spectrum ones, and then come back and tackle those cooperative ones and work on the cooperative ones together. Okay. And I know you get stuck on these periodically. If you get stuck and it's not a period where you want to wait for office hours or something, shoot me an email and I'll get you unstuck and moving in the right direction. And if you hit it to me on the Discord, I'll probably see it right away. And I'll probably respond a lot faster. If you hit me on email, it might take me an afternoon or so before I get back to you. But I will get back to you on email too. Okay? Sound like a plan? And we're gonna do some more of these together. So the next class, I think that we'll do more together. I want them to go a little bit more smoothly than that one that didn't have the exchange label. That kind of ticked me off a little bit. But like I said, showing you success and showing you how quickly you can go through them isn't reality. It takes you time to go through them. And so seeing somebody stammer through one where all the data isn't presented properly is probably more in line with what you're going to experience and realistic. And so Fair enough. These are challenging. I will tell you that NMR problems are challenging, and that it is they are worthwhile problems to solve. And sticking with it and being willing to stick with it is part of the skill set in solving them, and that it's okay for them to take time. That is a realistic expectation. Okay.
Sweet. Thanks, Jason.
All right. Hang in there, guys.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Right. Bye. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, can I talk to you after class?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Looks like everyone's on. I just wanted to let you know that I submitted it yesterday afternoon.
I saw it.
Okay. All right. I just want to touch base with you. All right. Thank you so much. And I'll see you on Monday.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Bye.